James O'Brien on LBC.
12:34 is the time. Donald Trump is trumping all over the United States of America and our sometimes vain but often successful attempts to try to keep track of the extent of the horror and the madness continue imminently with Simon Marks. Remember that if you are troubled by any of the appalling abuses currently being visited upon the United States of America and, of course, the wider world, then you are not somebody concerned about decency, democracy and the welfare of fellow human beings. You are suffering from something called Trump derangement syndrome. There was something similar, I think, in the 1930s. Another political figure, and if you had a problem with what he was up to long before he committed his worst excesses, then you were suffering from his derangement syndrome. No one ever suffers from Simon Marks' derangement syndrome. We can't get enough of him. Shall we start in New York?
I think that's a good idea, James, because certainly there are many people in the United States that have Zoran Mamdani derangement syndrome. Zoran Mamdani is going to become the next mayor of New York City next week. November the 4th is election day, and there's no question about the outcome of this race. He is the Democratic Party's candidate. He will cruise to victory. He will very easily dispose of his opponents, the Republican candidate, Curtis Sliwa. You may remember he of the Guardian Angels, the vigilantes that took to the New York subway system, if you're old enough to remember, back in the 1980s to try and clean it up. And he's also going to vanquish the former mayor, the former governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, who is running to be the mayor of New York City in a completely failed bid to try and revive his own political fortune. So Zoran Mamdani, a democratic socialist, as he describes himself, is going to become not only the first Muslim mayor of New York City, but also the first Indian American mayor of New York City. But it's the democratic socialist bit that has got his critics absolutely engaged in paroxysms of fear about the kind of government that he plans to oversee once he takes the reins of power in the Gracie Mansion in New York.
To the point where the Rupert Murdoch media in this country has ended up rather embarrassed because of their desperation, apparently, to undertake a hit job upon the future mayor of New York. Have you seen this story in the about the Bill de Blasio?
Yes.
I know you have. It's theatre, Simon. I'm just building up a little bit of tension. This is actually breathtaking. I can't remember seeing anything like this before in my life.
It's extraordinary. This is Bill de Blasio, the former Democrat mayor of New York City, himself pretty controversial for his tenure, which is widely considered, even by Democrats, a failure when he ran things in New York City. But earlier today, the Times, our Times,
the Times of London,
yes, as they always refer to it in the United States, published an interview with Bill de Blasio criticising Zoran Mamdani, which came as a bit of a surprise, given that Bill de Blasio has been a steadfast supporter of the aforementioned democratic socialist who's about to become the next mayor of the city. Well, it turns out that the Times appears to have been taken by some kind of scammer, because they've now, as far as I can understand it, removed the page from their website after Bill de Blasio put out a furious statement saying he never spoke to the newspaper, absolutely never spoke to the reporter in question, wanted to make it 100% clear that the views that were being published on the Times website were not his views about Zoran Mamdani, that he's completely lined up behind Mr. Mamdani's populist, radical, left-wing agenda. And it certainly looks as though the Times has been taken in
by an impersonator,
by someone who was impersonating Bill de Blasio. I mean, we've seen this before on various occasions with other politicians in the United States who have been taken in on various radio talk shows and things like that. But it's pretty extraordinary.
Well, it's
coming
different on
as
the radio.
Close as it has done to the election. Yeah, of course.
And you can hear John Coltrane's recent Full Disclosure, where he recalls the time he rang Downing Street pretending to be William Hague and got put straight through to Tony Blair, much to his own shock and surprise. Just to step out, well, staying with Donald Trump, but stepping out of the United States for a moment, when is a ceasefire not a ceasefire?
Well, that's the big question. When is peace in Gaza not peace in Gaza? And when is one of the eight wars that you've claimed that you have historically brought to an end actually about to start reviving? I mean, I think the events of the last few hours in Gaza and Israel's airstrikes on the territory again indicates the fragility, not just of the ceasefire, but of the entire 20-point peace plan that Donald Trump put forward. I mean, I think there's no question that, you know, on Monday a week ago, when the hostages, the living hostages, were being returned from Gaza, and Donald Trump made that triumphant visit to the Middle East, not just to Israel, but also to Sharm el-Sheikh, of course, in Egypt, you know, he was justifiably taking what appeared to be a lap of victory, but it was a premature lap of victory, especially given the fact that whatever the outcome of this new outbreak of hostilities between the two sides, there are still vast numbers of unanswered questions. How on earth is Hamas going to be demilitarized? The White House cannot answer that question. Donald Trump insists it is absolutely going to happen one way or the other. Either they give up their weapons or he says, we're going to go in there and take them from them. But who's the we here? Because he also says American boots aren't going to be put on the ground in Gaza. And that's just one element before you get to the question of what does the day after look like in Gaza? What does governance in Gaza really look like? This board of peace headed by Donald Trump with Tony Blair playing a pretty hefty role on the ground, according to the proposals that he's discussed with US officials. In practice, terms, what does that look like, and how much longer is the president really going to be able to say, I solved the war, when perhaps he didn't?
Reports of over 100 dead, of course, in Gaza, including reportedly dozens of children. Israel claimed that an Israeli soldier was shot by Hamas, but Hamas disputes that claim, and foreign journalists are still not allowed to go into the territory in order to provide some form of objectivity and clarity on these always confused and conflicting accounts. It's gone one of those days where we're not going to cover everything because there aren't enough hours in the day, so you choose what in order of importance. Simon, what's next?
I think we should talk about the government shutdown.
Yes.
Because we're almost a month into it now, and it's really going to begin to bite in the next few days. Food stamps recipients aren't going to be getting any more of their food assistance from the US government. That is literally going to leave people hungry in the lowest levels of income earners across the United States. Federal government workers aren't being paid. They have no idea whether, for example, their mortgage providers are going to offer forbearance against late payments, or whether traditional penalties are going to apply. I heard from one federal government worker yesterday who texted me and said, I am angry all the time, because there is, I think, tremendous tension now among hundreds of thousands of these civil service families. And take a listen to what Donald Trump said while he was in Asia yesterday, while he was in Japan, about where exactly he thinks this shutdown might be going. Because the thing to understand about all of this is that it's not accidental. It is by design. He leads a government, is his director of the Office of Management and Budget before they came into office, said that creating trauma among government civil servants was the aim. They view these government civil servants as the enemy within the US government. And listen to what Donald Trump said yesterday about Congress. He was arguing that when he put together that huge big spending and legislative proposal, the so-called Big Beautiful Bill that he's now signed into law, well, as far as he was concerned, that was his relationship with Congress pretty much done and dusted.
I said, put it all into one bill, and if we get it done, we're done for 4 years. We don't need anything more from Congress in terms of that, right, Scott? We got it all done. It was a little risky, but because if we didn't get it done, I don't know, who knows what would happen with these radical left lunatics that we have to deal with.
So he absolutely relishes this shutdown, doesn't have anything to worry about as far as, from his perspective, Congress is concerned, has no need for it, he suggested there going forward, because this is giving him the opportunity once again to try and prove that the powers of the presidency are unlimited. Even the fact, James, that he is in Asia preparing for that all-important meeting with President Xi Jinping of China tomorrow, even that is extraordinary. Most American presidents wouldn't leave the country and make a huge international trip at a time when the government was shut down. They'd be here trying to get it reopened. Donald Trump loves this shutdown, and he is very unconcerned about whether it comes to an end, even though some of the developments over the next few days are further going to depress his numbers in the opinion polls, because all those families impacted by all of these funding cuts and furloughed pay packets are going to get very angry very quickly.
It's easy to see why your contact is so angry already, with more on the way. And I can't believe this, but this is the only way I can phrase the question. They've killed more people without any evidence of wrongdoing.
Yes, they have. Absolutely. Four more boats. There were varying reports yesterday, three or four boats in the Caribbean blown out of the water yesterday, in the Pacific, actually, they said yesterday. Right. Once again, providing no evidence at all to support their claims advanced by the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, that these boats were carrying drug traffickers to United States shores. I mean, we just have to apparently believe that because he said it. He hasn't provided any evidence to support it. 14 people killed. I believe one survivor was recovered in the waters after those attacks rained down on those maritime vessels. And every indication that the government of Donald Trump is still planning to launch airstrikes on what they claim are drug trafficking operations on Venezuelan soil. I mean, the maritime stuff is all extrajudicial, and they don't even pretend that it's covered under international law. If they do start launching airstrikes on Venezuelan soil, the Venezuelan government will view that as an act of war and a direct assault on the country's sovereignty, despite the lack of democratic qualifications that President Nicolas Maduro enjoys in Caracas.
And finally, the head of Border Patrol finally receiving a little bit of pushback from a judge in Chicago. Bovino,
well,
the rather stressful nominative determinism, isn't it, in action?
Absolutely amazing story. This is Greg Bovino. He is the head of the Border Patrol. And remember that Donald Trump is slowly giving more authority to the Border Patrol in terms of the mass deportation program and taking some authority away from ICE, the Immigration Customs and Enforcement Division. Bovino, and I mean, this is, I'm saying this objectively, he has been strutting around Chicago like he owns the place. He's always dressed in fatigues. He was seen on video lobbing a tear gas grenade at a crowd of protesters exercising their constitutionally protected First Amendment rights to demonstrate against US government policy. He displays an arrogance and a cockiness that I think is unmatched in the field, even by the standards of Donald Trump's usually masked and thuggish operatives. Well, a judge literally yesterday ordered him to start appearing before a court in Chicago every night, every weeknight at 6 p.m. going forward, because she says she wants a report on his activities and the activities of the Border Patrol in an effort to make sure that the kind of danger that she argues they pose to civilians in Chicago by chucking this tear gas around willy-nilly is immediately headed off. So it's going to be very interesting to see if he turns up tonight and what kind of sanctions will be leveled against him if he either fails to turn up or if he continues to act in the absolutely indiscriminate way in which he's been acting over the last few days.
Well, I said there was a lot to get through, and we probably haven't got through all of it, but we've done a pretty good job, Simon, thanks to you. We will talk again soon, and that I think that is the thing to watch. I mean, it's so hard, isn't it, for me to say to you, or for Simon to say to you, that's the thing you need to watch most closely. Is it the shutdown? Is it the extrajudiciary murders, essentially, that are being undertaken without any rationale or reference to international law in the seas around America? Or is it the deployment of essentially sort of armed agents on the streets of American cities under the lie that they are in peril or unsafe? He said more than the National Guard will be deployed on American streets next. And the massive majority of the people that Bovino's operatives are targeting are American citizens. So even the immigration argument has gone out of the window now. It is 12:48. That question from Ed Davey, I'll remind you of it shortly. Something that adds to my sense that an awful lot of people who do what I do for a living are absent without leave when it comes to some of the stories that we should all be exercised by.